I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb, my co-host, and our guest again today is Madeline DeJolie. We had a show about the presentation that she and Jill did on their visit to the Army show in New York City. It opened up some interesting conversation points that we continued to discuss, and I invited her back to talk a little bit more about art in general, as the Armory show sort of influenced her thinking. Alan, bring up your point, because about something that she mentioned.
Yeah,
in
I noticed
that show.
That you mentioned in the show about the Armory show that you found that it was changing your impression about what's happening in art these days and where it's going. And I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on that, because I've had some fairly cynical notions about where contemporary art is, and I'd love to hear some encouragement about it.
Yes, well, the fact is that I really had limited exposure to contemporary art, I realized, when I got there.
Yeah.
Because there were things in the contemporary part of the show, the Armory show, that I found very intimate, that the artist's hand was involved in some of these things, which I happen to like very much. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. I'd love to read you a quote of William Kentridge's quote just about that subject, if I can find it. He said,
We'll give you a minute to find it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's handy that you happen to have some quotes with you.
I happen to have a lot of paperwork, but the one I'm looking for is not at my fingertips for some reason.
And William Kentridge was the person you were describing his work during the last show, the piece that was done as a tapestry.
Okay, well, I'll try to remember what he said. He said, I'm only an artist. I'm here to make art, not to make sense. Mm-hmm. You know? And he does that, you know, he succeeds. And his stuff was in the contemporary building, along with another artist. His name's Alexander Gorlisky. And he works in New York, and he uses Indian miniature technology. And his work is so fascinating. There's a atelier in Jaipur that works with him. And what he does is he has an idea, and he kind of makes some kind of marks on paper of where he wants things to go. And then he sends to Jaipur and says, do that same, that classic Indian miniature kind of tree here, and do this border here, and, you know, just based on antique Indian imagery. And then they'll send it back, and then it'll go back and forth and back and forth.
Does he work on it then himself?
And he works on it, and they work on it, and it goes like that. And the finished product is so charming. It's quite beautiful, because it's, of course, the contemporary version of Indian miniature painting. But what they had for him, and we do have a picture of this, there's a big lounge called the Art Forum Lounge. It has this bright magenta purple rug. And like right in the background of that is the doorway to his show. So some artists had one-person shows represented by a gallery, whereas other galleries would put in many different artists. Mm-hmm. But you could see the entry to his place, and his place was not wide open, it was just a doorway. And then you walked in, and what he did was he did the rug. He designed the rug, he designed the
wallpaper.
Now
this was his solo show?
Through a gallery. And he... So he did the wallpaper, the rug, and then the paintings that were hung up on the wall. And it was just, it was an experience. It was like being in a complete environment of who he was and who these people were that he worked with. So it was very complete and holistic.
It sounds personal and intimate too, as opposed to machine like.
Yeah. It was intimate, very intimate, and it wasn't big.
It also brings, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. It brings up the international flavor and nature of the contemporary art world. It's not just located in New York City any longer as the center of the art world, or Paris, or Berlin, or some European city, that there's major art happening globally, mm-hmm. and there's this back and forth interaction is happening, mm-hmm. and the market is definitely global. Mm-hmm. But that he was working in New York and sending, was that right? He was working in New York
and sending
to back and forth.
And go back
it's very,
and forth.
Of the times. It's interesting.
Yeah. And then there was another artist also in the Armory Show, contemporary, that his name is Theaster Gates. And he was represented by the Kavi Gupta Gallery in Chicago. And he was one of the speakers. Now, the Armory Show had forums of speakers giving presentations that we didn't attend any of those. There just wasn't time that we had for that. But he was one of the speakers, and he did. I don't even know why I photographed what he did. But it was these encased fire hoses and debris. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well,
debris of fires, or
it turned out that it was a destroyed firehouse from the race riots.
Oh.
In, I'm not sure where. I think Detroit or Chicago. I have that information somewhere. But it was so interesting, because the comments, people who reviewed the shows said that that show sold out almost instantly. And other shows, like there are other artists that were able to sell every single thing that they had within the scope of the gallery they were represented by. There was there's so many points I'd love to make, but the overall sales to museums and collectors was phenomenal, and mm-hmm. and not preconceived by anyone. Mm-hmm. They had artists that, they called them emerging, but every single artist that we've cross-referenced had like vast reputations, mm-hmm. so well known. And the video part was interesting, mm-hmm. because there was a lot of video represented, mm-hmm. and a collector could go in and buy a DVD starting at, say, $900. But they had to have their own equipment, because I asked, that's one of the questions I asked, yeah. people who were selling these, how do they play them? They don't play them on their TV monitors, you know, one would hope not. Mm-hmm. Especially the ones that were projected into corners. Mm-hmm. And apparently there's this whole new development of collectors having all that equipment already installed in their homes.
Yeah.
So that they can project 2 to 6 channel projections, which happen simultaneously. There was a Bill Viola piece at the Park Street Armory, which I claimed was more modern. Certainly there were other more contemporary work, but his was a 6 channel piece of that, just the heads, like there were 6 heads that he hired an actor to make expressions that were constantly changing. This, the other artist that I mentioned in the last show, Mark, who is a Swiss artist who did the woman going from one pool to the next, did, this was at the Scope show, he did an African-American woman completely defiant in a position within a box with fire coming all around her. And then actual fire came out of the enclosure that she was in.
Actual fire.
Actual fire.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was, you know, I asked again the dealer, I said, what is this supposed to be? And he said, it's the defiance of African Americans not to let anything stand in their way. And her expressions are just so powerful and so strong and wonderful.
Well, you're describing one topical piece after another. Was that the flavor of the whole thing, as opposed to, when I think of modernism, I think of formalism, actually.
Yeah.
And thus, that's of the old days. And
yeah,
it's the period prior to 1960. Mm-hmm. That's what I think of as modernism.
Right.
And today we have topical, we have relevant pieces to the history of art and to activist issues of the day. Was there a lot of that?
A social commentary?
Social commentary.
Well, Theaster Gates was a social commentator. There was another artist, his name is David Hammons, who... he said, for instance, I feel it's my moral obligation to try to graphically document what I feel socially. The urban society to which he is so attuned is crucially inflected by the presence of African Americans. And if Hammons admires basketball, it is as a game of which African Americans have made an art of improvisation, a whole other thing. And he did this piece called Highfalutin, which was originally named Spirit Catcher and relates to African traditions of mass and other spiritually protective sculpture. Art, Hammons has said, is a way to keep from getting damaged by the outside world, to keep the negative energy away, otherwise you absorb it.
Interesting.
Which, you know, I mean, I think it's a great comment, and as well as being somewhat evolutionary about not absorbing negative energy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I found, that there's more of a balance than I had imagined of humanity being brought into contemporary art.
That's great.
It's encouraging.
But again,
you know, it's what I was drawn to. And there could have been just the opposite there, but I didn't see it. But the whole phenomenon of video was very interesting, and I have a whole article about it. As I was saying, the price range went from $900 to like $140,000, just depending on who the artist was, how big their reputation was.
That's for the software that would be played in some kind of hardware.
Yeah, without the projection possibility. Yeah.
That's interesting. I've been wondering about that for some time now for my sound art, whether I would just do a limited edition of signed audio CDs, and they come in a nice little box, and that's that. And it's not... It doesn't come with speakers and amplifiers as a standalone installation or mini installation. It comes as the content, and you provide. In many cases, there'd be instructions on how it's supposed to be presented. But that's the whole thing. I provide the recipe and the unique ingredients, and then you get the standard ingredients and finish the installation in your living room.
Well, you would provide the content.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening with these DVDs
and
the projection material, because it's not the responsibility of the seller to implement the means of projection.
Yeah.
Or hearing, or, in your case, or whatever.
Yeah.
And
because I have pieces that would be rather complicated to present.
Yeah.
Make a room 30 feet by 30 feet with a 15-foot ceiling and, you know, put this equipment in these places and hook it up this way.
Yeah, well,
and then,
it's tricky.
Yeah.
It's tricky, but because there's a demand now for that, I think that, you know...
Well, video, it seems to be really taking
videos
hold.
It's like the graphics medium.
So,
now
but
that it's high definition,
it's
finally usable.
Now, what I'm wondering is, video seems to be, the way you're talking, sounds like video is as strong as ever. What about installation? Mm. Is it fading? Is there less installation? Like a whole room that's an installation piece?
The installation pieces...
It's not so easy to sell to the market.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I saw a great installation piece at Mary Boone Gallery. We also saw galleries in Chelsea, and that was a wonderful experience. The one I'm thinking of right now was an installation, and it was what's getting to be a common installation of an inverted conical mound. You know, Anish Kapoor has used them, Wolfgang Leib has used them with bee pollen, Anish Kapoor with blue pigment in a rose room. I've got a slide of that. It's just incredible. But this one was a 24-foot in circumference mound of rock salt. But the pieces were quite big. And I asked, the artist's name was Terence Koh, K-O-H. And he was actually in the gallery in a performance. And the reason I went to see it was because, again, my friend Lita told me about it, and I made it a point to go and see it. And what she said that when she first saw it, she thought it was like a bunch of rags lying on the floor next to this piece, the inverted conical shape. But what it was Terence Koh, the artist himself, was prostrate on the floor with his hands and legs out, pointing to the east. And then what he would do is he would get up and he would walk on his knees around this form. And then when he got to a certain point, he would prostrate and then get up and continue all day long.
Wow.
He finally, like after the third day, he started wearing knee pads.
Yeah, I bet.
but it was, he had no expression on his face. There were people, I read about that there were people that tried to disturb him and break his pattern.
Yeah, and,
there's always someone. And he's, you know, he has done several spiritually imbued pieces. But he's not known for that specifically, like Wolfgang Leib is known for that. And so when I went out...
And this was at Mary Boone?
This was at Mary Boone, and it's probably still there. And or maybe if not, it can be Googled, like everything else. And I went out to the person sitting at the front desk, which was in another room, because this room was only had that thing in it. And I said, well, how did you do that shape there? You know, it's like 24 feet around and about at least 8 feet high or more. And he said they had a conveyor belt come in and the salt was dropped from a point. Mm-hmm. And at that point did you put a border around so it wouldn't go out irregularly? Or, and he said, no, that's the way it happens naturally.
Yeah.
It's the way it fell.
So, it's a bell curve. There's a whole branch of mathematics that describes how things fall onto each other, onto themselves.
Yeah. So, so that was interesting. We also saw a very good one-person show by Tara Donovan, who uses straight pins in this show. It was at Pace Gallery. And
she had a show at Des Moines.
In Des Moines on straws, I heard. Was there anything else besides
straws?
There
were several kinds of pieces there.
Well,
what did you see when at her show?
All she had were straight pin pieces.
Uh-huh.
And however, the way we're doing this, we're sequencing certain trends. And that's the other point to make, is that we did see enough modern art, and we also know enough modern art, to draw lines of continuity between the evolution of Marx, for instance. Like, what we did was we started with Jasper Johns doing those wonderful Marx, almost cross-hatching but not going over each other, on paper. And then we have that going to Gunther Uecker, something like that, this German man who was in the modern art section, that he does pieces just with nails. So we went from Jasper Johns to the nail pieces, to Tara Donovan. And before I go to her, Gunther was part of a group called Zero, which was a group in Germany that were very progressive artists and very pushing the boundaries. And he has a wonderful thing, which I'll read at the presentation, about Zero and nothingness. And it's just, you know, I think very applicable to things that are known around this neighborhood.
Right.
Tara Donovan, of course, is a different kind of mark making. And then we have a whole progression into other artists that have just taken it and run with it. But I could run a few historical sequences like that. Mm-hmm. It seemed, you know, maybe it was just my own interpretation, but it seemed that it made sense how people are ending up or where they are right now, and then they have other experimentation, further evolution on what they do. It's exciting, you know.
Was there anything that was just a sound installation or a sound piece?
No, Alan.
It's quite all right.
It wasn't.
I'm not offended.
I'm
relieved. Well, sound is problematic in a gallery environment anyway, because it's so, you know, intrusive. One person's piece takes another person's space.
But there are so many people there making noise.
Yeah, and that too. It's not conducive to anything subtle, sonically.
There was one artist that was just phenomenon. His name is Shi Jindian, and he is from China or Korea. I'll look it up, but he's definitely amazing. He crochets wire, and he did a motorcycle completely crocheted out of wire, and the dealer told me.
Pictures of that.
He has a gallery in Chicago.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a Chicago gallery, I'll get the name of it, but that only shows Asian artists. And he's one of their artists. Mm-hmm. But he'll take the motorcycle apart completely, and he'll crochet around each part.
Oh, wow.
And then he'll figure out a way of breaking them apart, putting them back together, and he'll reassemble it as if it were a solid motorcycle, but it has all that translucency and texture and interesting. It's just amazing to look at and to know it's a guy that did it, that crocheted this whole thing.
Yes, well, of course, it was a motorcycle that he crocheted.
Of course, he did a bicycle
with wire. Very male.
He also did. He crocheted wire embryos and pregnancies.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's very patient.
Interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, like I think of one artist, and this was at also at Scope. The independent had an interesting ceramic piece that was on the floor. The independent one was the one that was supposedly more edgy, and Feature Gallery was in that. Mm-hmm. Who I think you know, Hudson.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was in the independent show along with White Columns and other galleries like that. And the woman that I'm thinking of did huge ceramic pieces that, you know, were probably at least 40 feet long of tire tracks that were in segments. It almost, I don't know if you know the artist Stephen DeStabler. He's a California mm-hmm. artist. Mm-hmm. He does things in sections. But it reminded me a little of his work, not that he would have done anything on the floor, but that was interesting. And you know, it was a lot to take in, you know?
I'm sure it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. And
sounds like a world's fair.
It is.
Well, as I said, you know, it's like we had to delete in our perceptive facilities.
Yeah.
So much.
It must have been exhausting.
Well, how long did it last? A week?
It didn't even last a week.
Oh, really?
It went from the 3rd of March through the 6th.
Mm. Do you know how many vendors in all?
No, I don't.
A lot, yeah.
I don't know
from all
how
over
many.
The world.
But the gallery shows that were complementary to this mm-hmm. armory show, of course, lasted longer.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to just say for those who tuned in the middle that we've been interviewing Madeline DeJolie about her trip with Gillian Brown to New York City and filling us in on what's happening with the international art world is expressed through the Armory Show that just took place there in March of 2011, and that she and Joe will be presenting April 7th and April 14th at Icon Gallery 2011, a presentation on all of this. Any final words?
That I'm looking forward to sharing what we know with everyone.
Well, thanks so much for doing all of this.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.